On Pilot TV this week, we're back on Denmark Street. No, not buying submachine guns from the guitar teacher cum arms dealer in Black Doves, but investigating another murder alongside Strike and Robin in The Ink Black Heart, the new series of Strike on BBC One. And Robin herself, Holiday Granger, is with us on the show later to talk about that. And quite honestly, that's pretty much the only thing I can say with absolute certainty about this week's podcast. Maybe because it's Christmas and we're all pulling the cracker at both ends, so to speak.
But this episode of the Pilot TV podcast has been a little unorthodox.
I'm James Dyer, and welcome to a festively ramshackle episode of the Pilot TV podcast, your essential guide to every show that matters. Joining me in body, if not in spirit, are my two co-pilots, Kay Ribeiro and Boyd Hilton. So guys, it's been a bit of a week. So to give people some context of what we're doing, Strike, it's in the bag. We know what we're doing. It's on. We've seen it. Boom. And we're like, well, what else is on? And the answer was not an awful lot, right? So we thought, well, the second season of Based on a True Story is out. We'll sort that out. We'll sort out screeners for that. Didn't go according to plan. Screeners didn't really work. Couldn't really sort that out. But some of us may or may not have been able to see that in the end. But we thought, okay, let's play it safe for the third option this week. Dexter, Original Sin, we were very excited about. We couldn't review it on last week's show because it was heavily embargoed. Well, that's fine. This show goes out after it's aired. We'll be fine. Were we fine? We were not. Screeners didn't show up. We haven't seen Dexter, Original Sin, despite the fact that everyone listening to this has seen it because it's aired.
Yeah.
We, as we record it, have not seen it, so we are unable to review that.
Guys, send in your reviews.
I don't think in the history of this podcast have so many desperate emails been sent to one gaggle of publicity operatives at Paramount Plus and its various offshoots. Literally like three times a day, and then building up. That was like, you know, a week ago, and building up to more like four times within an hour. And they're going, oh yeah, you know, positive noises. Yeah, you should get it. I'm not having a go at them. It's not their fault.
I'll tell you what the positive noises would be. Yeah. The sound of Dexter coming from our screens.
I mean, yeah, you know, I mean, as everyone knows, Dexter, the ghostly version of Dexter is going to arrive soon. And Lord knows when we're going to get that one, to see that one either. Let's never assume.
Listen, the press teams are all working very hard. It's not their fault.
Yeah. It makes me worry a bit about, you know, it has the opposite effect, doesn't it, of what presumably Paramount Plus in the States, the overlords, want to happen, which is a sense of mystique or, you know, but you just think, oh, it must be crap if they're not going to let anyone see it until it actually goes out.
That's, we should emphasise, that is often not the case.
Yeah. No, it's not.
No, but that's where my head goes when I hear that. But that's, I think, what I'm saying, you're trying to
It feels like you're something to, you're worried about it. And, you know, I'm really excited about it. Paddy Gibson, friend of the pod. Well, I've interviewed him twice.
friend of the Boyd.
Friend of the me. So, yeah, it's infuriating. First world problems. Some first world problems are more annoying than others, and this is a really annoying one.
Yes, this is bothering me because it's a show I really want to see, so I really wanted to be able to talk about it, and now we're not going to.
No.
Twice we've not been able to talk about it. It's shocking. Someone's waking up covered in cling film, that's all I'm saying.
Maybe we should, when it goes out live, so to speak, on TV, whenever it is, maybe we should do an impromptu, you know, like watch along. I'm not actually advocating it. Don't worry.
Okay, look at me like I'm Boyd mad. Will be doing a watch along live.
My own watch along.
He's throwing open his mansion doors for you all to watch. That's in his actual living room.
If you want to join Boydie and Richard and Judy in Boydie's bed to watch Dexter Original Sin, you can do that. Good.
Maybe next year we'll think of doing things like that. And charging people for it, obviously. Not for free.
Oh my God, a live event.
Yeah, like, you know, watch along as you have to do. You can do. Yeah, I'm just putting it out there. Ideas.
Look at me, he's just an idea factory. Yeah, it's like shooting with live ammo here.
Yeah, right.
Incredible scenes. Right, okay, so we've got 1.5 shows reviewing this week, but that doesn't matter. That doesn't matter because there's lots of other exciting things we're going to talk about, starting with what we've been watching this week. And let's begin with UK. What have you been watching this week?
So this week, I've basically been watching Bad Sisters and Shrinking. So we kind of touched upon this the other week.
Are you being paid for by Apple TV Plus?
It feels like you're suspicious. An Apple TV Plus shill.
But listen, I'm open to offers, I would say to Apple. Okay. But no, I'm currently not on a retainer. But it's because, unlike you two, as we discussed last week, and James was a little bit smug and I had to...
Sorry, that doesn't narrow it down.
What?
Yeah, I know. He was taking the piss, thinking I didn't have access to all of them on our preview sites. And I said, I do. I do have them. But what I'm doing is I'm watching on the weekly. So that's why I'm...
So how many episodes are we into Bad Sisters now on the live? five?
Oh, God, now you're talking... Five?
Okay,
four,
okay.
Five?
So there's like three left.
And so it was the scene when they're on the boat, yes, with the Ashes. That's the episode I watched. And I'm just obsessed with Fiona Shaw's character and trying to figure out what her game is. Obsessed. And the other show, Apple as well, it's a coinky dink, Shrinking, which is just getting better and better, and I love it. It's one of my favourite shows this year. Anyway.
I know, because we had a spirited conversation about it when we were hammering out our review of the year list.
It's the only one I insisted upon because I knew I'd be overridden with everything else.
That's hard.
No. Gosh, wow. True.
Love Rat is on the list.
No, that's Boyd's favourite. No. I largely agreed with the list, but I said I did want Shrinking on there. And you'll have to wait and see if anyone listened to me.
Yeah, Shrinking gets there just above Dalgleish, I think.
Shut up, boy. Have you watched Shrinking?
Yes, I'm joking.
Oh,
I'm
good.
I really like Shrinking. I have not kept abreast of this series because of lots of other things to do.
You're lost, Boydo.
My loss, mate. But I will watch it. I watched the whole of season one. I very much enjoyed it.
Can you watch it over Christmas so that we can have a little chit chat?
Maybe. We'll see.
I'll put something in the diary.
I've got something
excited for us to both look forward to over the festive period. James, what have you been watching?
So there are two things predominantly that I've been watching. The first one I am, as we discussed, contractually bound not to mention.
100%.
But I will say I watched a lot of The Thing I Can't Talk About this week.
Okay.
And I am up to now the final season of said thing. Fine. And I watched more hours of it than was probably sensible.
What's the other show that you're allowed to talk about?
The other show I'm allowed to talk about, and obviously not to continue the theme, is it's a show on Apple TV Plus, Kate. It's
wow.
Cha-ching!
Yeah, exactly. I went back to For All Mankind, which I have been egregiously behind on. So you did a spoiler special for All Mankind season four this year. And not only did I not participate in that, I didn't participate in the review of For All Mankind because I hadn't even watched season three.
Oh, this is the one that he was behind.
Yes.
He refused to catch up on.
Yeah, because it was a lot. But the thing with For All Mankind, it's one of these things where, because it's quite deliberately paced, and it's quite slow. Like, it's one of these things where when you're watching it, you're loving it. But I find that between seasons, you just remember it as being not a slog, but you remember it as being quite, you know, deliberately paced, a little bit slow. So it's not like you're like, oh, I must get back to that. It's so exciting. You're like, oh, that's brilliant. I will get to it. Like, it feels like, you know, eating your bran flakes or something like that. It's good for you.
Fibrous.
But it's not, you know, it's not like Moorish and sugary. However, the beginning of season three is wild. So is it Polaris, isn't it? It's the space hotel.
Yeah.
When it all goes wrong in the space hotel at the beginning of season three. Yeah. And I was like, this is incredibly exciting. No. So it's four is Mars.
Oh, yeah,
three is the beginning of the race to Mars.
Yeah, yeah.
And this is set in the early 90s.
Yes.
And that first episode was wild. And it's one thing on top of another, and then it's the race to Mars. Mm. And I was like, so I think I'm about four episodes in. I'm loving it. Like, I'm having the best time with it. I can't believe I've waited literal years
to
catch up.
And what made you finally catch up on it?
Because I know I've been remiss. And I've got the point now where, other than watching The Thing That Cannot Be Named, you know, I have a lot of things on the backlog. And it was either, I thought, right, I've got to go back and pick up one of the things. And it was either pick up with The Americans, which is a big blind spot of mine, because I've only ever watched the first season and a half of The Americans, genuinely held by a lot of people as one of the greatest shows. So I've like, I've got to get back to that. And there are a few others in there as well. I've got The Tower I still haven't finished. I've got a list. And for some reason, I went, do you know what? I'm just going to pick this one. Just going to do this one. I thought, I just want one episode, just one. Mm. And then, you know, four episodes later, loved it.
Well.
So, yeah, For All Mankind.
Yeah, it's a brilliant show. Absolutely brilliant show. It's up there with the very best, Kay.
Also, I feel like it's a modern, acclaimed science fiction show. And for me not to have seen it makes me feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, that's insane. And from the guy who did
Ron D. Moore. Yeah, exactly that. So I felt like I owed it to myself to catch up.
Oh, well done.
So much like them racing to Mars, I am racing to season four.
Question. Now, the contract said you couldn't talk about the show that can't be mentioned till Christmas.
Oh, that's true.
But I wanted to ask something. I don't know if you're willing to do this, but I'll respect if you don't want to, it's fine. Okay. How would you feel about putting up a poll on social to say, that it potentially might be extended depending on the poll.
What? Until next forever?
Christmas. Yeah.
So I can never mention that show again, and it becomes the redacted show.
It would be
show.
A popular choice among the listeners. I would venture to suggest.
It's democratic. How do you feel? I
think that's reasonable, though. I think, you know, in the interest of democracy and fairness, mm-hmm. it should be extended to include Seinfeld.
Yes.
And it should include Frasier. Yeah. Like there are a few.
Seinfeld, fine. I think there are a few. I think you missed it there.
Yeah, no,
really
don't say it. No, you can get away with it.
I'm about to talk about it.
Yeah,
anyway,
good.
So. Oh, are you now?
You didn't say Curb.
I didn't say
exactly.
Curb. I can't say Curb because I can't deny Boydie the opportunity to talk about it when he goes on flights and things. So,
okay. Seinfeld and West Wing. We'll put it to the poll.
Now, we should say Boydie may or may not.
Whispering.
I don't know what you're talking about.
We can't even mention the title.
Yeah.
I genuinely think
no
I
one's
got
allowed
it wrong.
To mention it.
And really, Friends. I mean, you know, I sometimes think Friends is worse, is more egregious than The West Wing.
Hey, it used to be The Expanse, but I've really dialed down my mentions of The Expanse recently. So actually, that's we're doing all right.
That's true. Yeah.
But Boydie, now you've been on a recent trip,
yes.
haven't you? Tell us about your trip and what you've been watching on your trip.
I went to New York as is my wont on my birthday around. The time of my birthday.
Happy
December
birthday,
9th.
Boyd, for a few days.
Thanks
ago.
For your lovely card. Aww. I think from James.
You're welcome, Boydie.
I was tempted. I was like, do I sign this from James knowing that he will
That would
have
been. I'm just saying, who was the first person to send you a message on your birthday, Boydie? Who was it? Who was the first person?
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Good. That's
okay.
right.
Only because I was caught on a deadline and I wanted to do a post.
A
social post.
Mm. Anyway, on the flight out, I did what is. My tradition, which I've mentioned before, which is watching
Curb.
I cannot raw dog for more than about 5 seconds. That's the
You're
I have to watch something
to,
or listen
TV.
To something.
I can't even raw dog in this podcast. I've got to get on my phone
every
5 seconds.
We know that. We're all too aware.
Do not talk about that.
So I did watch Curb. Now, what I watched was the most recent season, 12, the final season. And this is my first time of rewatching it. Since it went out, I watched it about 3 times originally because I did interview Larry David as a
controversial final season, which it should be said you think is brilliant, but it's been divisive,
well,
right?
You know, some people who didn't like it. Who are they?
The Empire Office.
Some people in the Empire Office. But I think Nick liked it. Nick Dissembly liked it. I think it's Alex didn't like it.
No, I think they were all a bit like it's not.
Oh, I remember having a conversation with Nick where we detailed some of the funniest bits of the show and enjoyed ourselves.
Okay.
I think it's one of those. This always happens with Curb, whereby even when there are, I would say 2 or 3 episodes, even while I was watching them months ago when it went out, I thought, oh, a bit substandard. But the thing about it is when you watch them back, they become funnier and funnier with, you know, the more, because you kind of...
Do you spot new things?
You spot new things, and it's just the silliness of it becomes more foregrounded, I think, for some reason. I don't know why. So I absolutely loved watching the whole of the final season again on my flight out. And... spoiler alert, it'll be my top 10 of the year, obviously coming up later. But it is, rewatching it does really, really help with Curb. I think it's the most rewatchable show in my whole canon of things that I like. So I did that on the way out. On the way back, I found a little show on the Virgin TV and film system called Hacks. Not only is it's Hacks season 3.
Shut up.
Did you watch the whole thing?
The missing season 3.
Listen, our listener, do you not remember? I think it was
no,
Mira.
Yes.
She said she'd watched it on the flight.
But do you remember she was on BA?
Well, I said
right.
BA, I'm not sure.
So I was like, well, it's not going to be on Virgin. If it's on BA, it's not going to be. But that doesn't work like that. Obviously, they'll make it available. Whoever the fucking holds the rights to Hacks, bearing in mind it's an HBO production, but it went out on Prime Video here for some reason. The first 2 seasons, and now it's not going out anywhere at all for some other reason. I've got a big news flash coming up when I finish this segment, by the way, just to let you know.
Oh,
it's some exciting news about Hacks coming up soon. But I watched the whole fucking thing. 9 episodes, which is a weird number, not 8 or 10, 9 episodes in season 3.
Just be grateful.
And it is absolutely brilliant. I mean, there's a reason why when you look at all the American top 10 lists, you know, of like their favorite TV shows of the year, Hacks season 3 is everywhere, basically, with the American critics, because it's such a brilliant season. And there's loads of incredible like things about it. Like, for example, the very first scene is Ava, who is the character, the writer played by Hannah Einbinder, who has this working relationship with Jean Smart's character, Deborah, who's this grand, famous comedienne. The first scene is Ava driving along in LA, and she sees a huge billboard for Supreme, as in my Supreme clothing.
She saw the BOGO.
She's on the BOGO. And the person they've picked to advertise Supreme is Jean Smart's character. So they have a little to and fro. She crashes her car because she can't believe.
That's so cool.
Yeah, that Deborah Vance, this you know, 60-something veteran comedian, has got a deal with Supreme, and she is the face of this season of Supreme. She crashes her car. Then she has a whole chat with her about it, all happening in the first 10 minutes of the episode. So the first real bit of storyline is about Supreme. How mad is that?
Supreme have done a collab now, because that would be so cool to tie in.
One of the sparkly jackets?
Yeah.
Something like that would be
cool. To my knowledge, they haven't, but they must have given permission for
that. They must have missed a trick. Yeah. That would be so fun.
Yeah. But in real life, they've had people like Morrissey famously did a Supreme thing, and Lou Reed and Neil Young, people like that. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility in life that a woman like that character would be in the Supreme. They're quite open to different ages and different, you know, all kinds of things. So that was incredible that there's a Supreme storyline. Then there's also in episode one where they go to, so she's in, they go to, was it Toronto? Yeah, for the Just for Laughs festival. Her agents, Deborah's agents, get the cake from Tom Cruise, the Tom Cruise cake.
Yes.
So then there's a Tom Cruise coconut cake story.
This is amazing.
Yeah. It feels like all things are happening to us in our lives.
Is there an episode where they all just watch The Expanse back to back?
Maybe coming up. But there is really funny about the Tom Cruise cake, by the way.
Which is delicious.
Which is, if you like coconut, obviously.
Oh, it's so good, and I missed out on it this year.
It's so
good. I'm furious. You had it, didn't you?
Of course. I ate so much of it.
Biffa.
But then the whole thing picks up from there, and it's fantastic. There's an episode where Deborah and Ava get lost in the woods, and you think something really horrible is going to happen, and that's fantastic. That's one of the best episodes. But the funniest thing about it is watching it on a plane. So I'm watching it
first class.
Upper class.
Oh, my God.
It's not first class.
Were you in a bed?
It's cheaper than...
Were you in a bed?
I was in a bed, yeah.
Okay.
Come on.
It's cheaper. Okay. On your plane, was there any class above the class you were in?
No, of course not.
There we go.
It's the pilot.
Yeah, basically, unless you were the pilot.
Anyway, because you're in first class doesn't mean there aren't kids there. So there are quite a few kids with their parents.
Dude,
on
you
this
get to lie
flight.
Down.
No. This is just preliminary explaining what I'm about to tell you.
Okay, fine.
Which was excruciating. Which is, I'm sitting there watching Hacks, episode 3, 4, whatever. And Hannah Einbinder's character, Ava, has a girlfriend in this series. And there is a scene of intimacy between these two actresses that, I kid you not, is full-on boobage to boobage. And it looks like, if you just wandered past my screen, it looks like you're watching like a porn film. Honestly, there is nothing
separating it. Do you know what? You are recognisable. So I wouldn't be surprised if there's not a snap of you circulating
somewhere. So I'm like, oh my God, this is like... So I'm trying to angle the screen,
worse.
Right?
That's worse.
First, yeah. Oh, and I look around, I think, is anyone watching me watching this fucking softcore porn thing that suddenly Hacks has turned into, right?
Yeah.
And a little kid wandered by, yeah, and looked up. I could not even acknowledge his existence or anything. I was like, he's got to tell his parents.
This is incredible.
There's a pervert in seat
it's
wherever.
It's basically a seat from Curb.
But what's amazing about it is, I mean, lesbian, you know, woman on woman sex scene, fine, that's great. But look at the way it was shot and just the image of these two women with their boobs out. Yeah. With each other.
It's going to be like, Mommy, what's the gentleman over there being? Honey, that's called raw dogging.
So it was very unfortunate from that point of view, but I had the joy of watching the show. But my big news is, I was, when I got back to work, doing what I do, which is
finally,
one of the things I do is I do the Watch From Your Sofa section in Heat Magazine, in our Unmissable section, where I highlight three like home video releases or whatever, or stuff you can watch streaming in the company of your own home, on Sofaplex, as I believe they call it in the podcast. And what should I find in my research? Then Hacks Season 3 is coming out on DVD and Blu-ray on the 16th of January.
We still don't know when it's coming to streaming.
No, I'm presuming that whoever fucking distributes this thing has decided, fuck putting it on a channel or a streamer.
What?
We'll just put it on DVD. And that's what they're doing.
No.
Yes.
Boyd, like, and I respect you. I love you as a human. I think you've really got this wrong.
Okay. I'm just... I haven't invented it, would I? I wouldn't, you know.
But this seems too cuckoo bong to be real.
Well, I'm going to find it now. Go Season on. 3, free delivery, blah, blah, blah.
No, I believe you in that regard.
Amazon.co. What is the thing you don't believe?
It must
that,
come
I don't
to,
believe they wouldn't air it yeah. before.
It'll just drop, won't it? It'll just drop at the beginning of January somewhere. Where does it air? Is it Prime? Where does it air?
I think it's Prime.
Is it Prime?
It was Prime, but who knows why? Who knows what it'll be on now?
It's a good point.
It could move to anything. But yeah, it's 13th of January, season 3, according to HMV.com. Okay, are you saying HMV.com is lying?
No, I'm saying you are. listen, yes. Now, riddle me this. Do you think we could get away with expensing flights... Virgin flights.
Well, so that we can watch Hacks.
Yeah, because we need to review it. Well, right?
It'd be cheaper to watch it on the DVD.
Yeah, probably.
Which is out, as I've just
right,
said.
Killjoy. I'll
sign off the DVD expense. Yeah.
we could have got a trip to Fiji.
That is true, yes. Virgin upper class to Fiji, yes. So we can watch Hacks.
Imperative.
Yeah, that could work. But you know, with any holiday sort of like hotel mishaps, or was it fairly flawless?
No, I on the way to the airport to JFK from Manhattan, I went past the hotel. But it was so quick. I looked up and there it was, the Hilton JFK, whatever it's called.
The Boyd Hilton, Garden as it's now called.
I didn't have time to take a picture or anything. I was literally like,
I really think they should. I think they should put a plaque up for you there.
Yeah, well, you know, you can launch that campaign if you want.
Okay, he's with me, guys. Anyone listening who wants to, I'll put up a poll or something. Yeah. One of those sign.
But I did. I didn't watch that much TV in my hotel room. I watched football. Obviously, I watched Arsenal. Disappointing draw with Fulham. And
he was too busy on the Raz.
Yeah, I was on
birthday.
The Raz. Yeah. I did see one famous person out and about in Chelsea near where I was staying, which is Paul Rudd. I saw Paul Rudd.
Oh my god.
Yeah. And I've actually worked with him because I hosted a Q&A, and I thought as he walked by, I thought, well, wouldn't it be funny? Would it be a good story for the podcast and life if I just, oh, Paul, do you remember me? I hosted a Q&A with you a couple of years ago for that Netflix show that no one watched.
The one with Ashley B.
Yeah. But I didn't. I let it go. I let it walk. He had like dark glasses, and he had that dark glasses baseball cap.
Yeah,
don't bother me.
Yeah. Yeah.
I would think he lived in LA. I'm interested. He's New York. Good.
He's definitely got a place in New York, I think. I mean, why wouldn't he have?
I mean, don't we all?
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Spiritually, I do. Yeah. I had a lovely time. Thank you for asking. And but one of the highlights was Hacks season 3 for sure.
Jealous. Very, very jealous.
Now, obviously, I should say I haven't been on holiday, but I have been somewhere, which is very exciting this week. So this week on, what day was it? Tuesday? I want to say Tuesday. It was Tuesday. On Tuesday, I took a trip to Silo, Silo. I took a trip to the post-apocalyptic future and visited the Silo from, another Apple TV Plus show, Silo. Mm. And it was very exciting. Yeah, so as of today, I think that they have renewed Silo, and it is officially going ahead for season 3 and 4, which will round out the story. But also they're shooting 3 and 4 back-to-back at this studio that Apple have got.
So it was a set visit?
It was a set visit to Silo. So, like, the set is properly incredible, like genuinely incredible, the set is. So Apple own this whole thing, but it's like they've got the big spiral staircase from the beginning, which I ran up and down, which was great fun. They've got like all of the inside. You can go all in the apartment to walk through the streets. And I had lunch in the Silo cafeteria where they have the screen, you know, that looks outside. Yeah. It's not a green screen. It's an actual screen, which is really cool. An LED screen. I didn't say anything about LED volumes. Yeah. But I had the best time.
Were you allowed to take any pictures?
Was I allowed to? I don't know that I was going to be allowed to. I didn't want to risk it. I felt a little bit like I'd get
escorted off the
site. I felt like they'd send me out to clean, quite frankly, if I took pictures. But I think they did film some B-roll stuff, which at some point they might give to me, which would be good. But it was a lot of fun. I should say, look, while I was wandering the Silo, kind of taking in the scenery and sort of chatting with Rebecca Ferguson, I should say I did that while I was there, I ran into someone, actual Tim Cook.
What?
The Big Apple himself was on the set of Silo because he was visiting that day with his enormous entourage. And it was wild. And so obviously, like, Apple's become like sci-fi mecca for me, and K as well, but not for sci-fi. It's become like drama mecca for you and sci-fi mecca for me. But so I couldn't kind of pass up the opportunity to basically establish his nerd credentials, right? To talk nerd stuff with the Big Apple himself. So I tried. So I had a lovely chat with him and Rebecca Ferguson about, you know, Apple being kind of the refuge, the Battersea Dog's Home, if you will, for all kind of massively expensive, wildly cerebral, and extremely James-friendly.
And Schmigadoon.
I didn't mention Schmigadoon.
I should have done.
Yeah, I should have started with the Time Bandits and Schmigadoon. So what were you thinking, Tim, mate? Honestly. Yeah. But yeah, it it was a lot of fun. And honestly,
did you ask him about the inbuilt obsolescence of Apple products? And
I did not. No, it didn't come up, boy. Oh, okay. It didn't come up. Right. We just talked about the TV stuff, but in the spirit of Christmas, I'm going to share that interview that I did with them right here, right now on this podcast. I had a chat.
Oh my God!
Right, yeah. So I'm going to drop that in the podcast, and it'll even go on the YouTube.
Wait a minute. Back up.
Yes. All right. Vehicle reversing. Yes.
On the Pilot TV podcast, we've got an interview with Tim Cook.
We've got an interview with Tim Cook, the head of Apple.
The head of the richest company in the world.
Yeah.
The Big Apple.
So, and a company whose profit is bigger than that of most countries in the world put together.
Accurate, yes.
And probably one of the most powerful, I would say, like handful of people in the world, along with that idiot Tesla and all the other, and the others.
Elon.
And you were interviewing him on the Pilot TV podcast.
Look, it just shows.
And we still got me on the fucking carousel.
No, he's clearly we're still getting run. But he's clearly a massive fan of the Pilot TV podcast. Obviously, Boydie. Otherwise, you wouldn't expect
this. This could be our chance to get on the carousel.
Yeah, it could. It could. Yeah. I feel like if Apple don't promote the episode that has Tim Cook in, we have no
that
home.
That would be a big.
We have absolutely no home.
Wow.
But yeah, it was kind of wild. Actually, it was.
You nervous in the presence of a man worth?
Do you know what?
$80 billion.
How James were you?
I mean, quite James.
I don't know if we're getting on that carousel.
I think he was a little bit unprepared because like, the kind of interviews he normally does, they're very, you know, like business focused.
I don't
think he was fully prepared for someone to just bang on about foundation to him, and yet that's what happened.
Yeah, wow. And for all mankind, of course.
It was kind of funny. The only thing I will say is, so my audio, even though I was mic'd up, didn't record properly. So when you hear this interview, if my audio sounds really, really weird, it's because I've had to take my recording of it and up the volume to try and make it work.
What did you record it on?
I recorded it on my iPhone, ironically.
Oh, this is trying to open this hole.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I record it on my phone, and so they've got proper microphones, and I'm just got phone audio. That's why it sounds a bit weird. But no one wants to hear what I have to say.
Incredible.
Anyway, yes, this is me.
Extraordinary scenes.
And Rebecca Ferguson, and actual Tim Cook.
Well, guys, thank you very much for talking to me. So, Tim, this is your first time on one of these sets, so...
Not my first time on a set, but first time on Silo.
Right,
that's okay.
Right. Clearly, are you a fan, is the question.
I'm a fan, yes. It's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah.
And I going through, I was just in awe over the tour, and I can't wait to see that third door.
Mm.
I haven't seen that yet.
You shouldn't want to see it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously it doesn't bother you that the villain is the head of IT.
I can't talk about that.
But I think what I love about this show and what I love about so many of the shows on Apple is that Apple has become also the de facto home of, I want to say, cerebral adult science fiction. You know, whether it be Silo, Dark Matter, Foundation, Constellation, you know, see all of this stuff. And it feels like no one else is doing this stuff. And, you know, is that something that you're proud of?
I'm very proud of it. Yes, we set our sights on that. And we also want to broaden the audience some, because a lot of this kind of like Silo is for everyone. It's not just for sci-fi fans, but it's great for sci-fi fans. And so, yeah, I'm very proud of it.
And was Rebecca, like doing the show here, it feels like Apple was a place that this show was going to go the distance. You know, I'm not naming any other streamers, but it feels like Apple's approach to sort of programming is slightly different, that it's a focus on prestige and quality rather than eyeballs. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but I wouldn't, to be honest, I absolutely adore Apple, but I would never say that Apple was the person who would do this show, but Apple were the people who made the show. And Apple made the show and helped us be able to create something that... There's a freedom in the creative language. You know, there is no control in a sense from the top dogs. It's a little bit like people overseeing something and coming with really nice comments and support, but also giving us a tablet and a freedom, a palette to discover and play. And that feeling is sometimes unusual.
Yeah.
Did I say that well?
Yeah. Very well. And I would just say on your question, we're really looking for that intersection of something that's truly great, something that's truly the best, but is also a commercial success. And so it's not about prestige at the end of the day for us. We hope that by making the best, somebody recognizes that, and hopefully more than one. But that's not the reason for doing it.
But if it's like Silo is the kind of show because it has a puzzle box element to it. Like
yes, it does.
Massive crossover appeal. It's hugely popular.
Yes.
But equally, you've given...
It's Tim's mind.
Yeah.
Literally, the puzzle box.
It's,
yeah.
But it is, you know, the first season has this amazing payoff at the end. The second season has a whole new... They had sets up a third season, which has an even more interesting puzzle to it. I've been lucky enough to see the whole of the second season. And which, you know, which is lovely for audiences. And I feel like there's a lot there for them. But I feel also Apple also supports shows that, you know, like, so take Foundation, for example,
yes,
which is actually work of genius. Gore did an incredible job for it. But it's also, it doesn't, you know, it's what David Simon used to call lean forward television, where it doesn't pander to you. It's very much, it's, I won't say inaccessible, but it's quite dense. And I love that show has been given the chance to breathe.
Yes, we give great storytellers the chance to breathe,
yeah,
and to tell their stories. And we want to make content that makes a difference in the world in some kind of way. It moves you to think about something on a deeper level, or you become a part of something. So it's both great entertainment and it makes a difference. And so that's what we're trying to do.
How are you feeling about 3 and 4? It's going to be a long old shoot. You've got a year of this.
I have scheduled my home life. I've got Pilates in. I've got a reformer on set. No, it's wonderful. And also, sort of, when you get involved in something like this, the books are of a certain quantity and mass, and we all knew how far it would have to go. It's more, will the audience like it? And the fact that it's going so well, it's just such a sort of homage to all of us being involved in it. So yeah, it's phenomenal that we get to do season 3 and 4. And even if it's long, it's going to take the time it takes. And I'm excited.
I get notes from the audience, you know, because my email is fairly accessible. And there is a very passionate email. And
Tim,
I don't want to give
Apple?
It on to
you.
Almost.
You're not Tim
almost.
Apple.
It's T. Cook at Apple. And so it's like everybody could guess that.
Well, now they can.
But it's marvelous how many people were saying, I've got to have more.
Yeah.
I want the next season and the next season.
They emailed
of course.
You?
Oh, of course. Yes.
It's so funny. I wouldn't think.
Yes.
That's amazing. And
yes,
you interact personally.
I do.
When you
yes
can.
Yes. Yes.
See?
If I had known I could email you about this stuff, I'd have
you
been
can
a long time ago, so.
Right now. But personable. And I mean, yeah, I keep on coming back to this. It trickles down, doesn't it? I know Graham Yost often says, the showrunner, he would say, oh, Rebecca, you hold the set. And I think, no, it's Graham. It's above. It goes. It trickles.
Yeah.
The fact that you say you interact with people on such a personal level, it's tech, but it's humanity, and it's storytelling, and it's merging everything, right?
Yes, that's right. That's exactly right. It's that intersection, which is such a rare intersection to be in. And again, we only want to make the best. And I think Silo is just a marvelous example of that.
I love the fact that you have the time to binge watch science fiction. You're quite a busy man, right? You know what I mean? But
yes,
I love that you're still in touch with Only Geek. That means a lot to me.
It's called Less Sleep.
But I mean, Rebecca, as an EP, do you, like, how, because this has done amazing things in adapting Hughes' material and making it work on screen in a slightly different way and like structuring it across seasons, you know, how granular do you get into that storytelling process?
I think number one, and it's not trying to get away from, I would want to highlight the fact that I don't, number one, see it as a science fiction show, because the fact that it has futuristic elements, and I think it's more on an intelligent, it's not making it unintelligent, calling it sci-fi, just boxing it in.
Mm.
It's so much broader. It's taking a concept of where our minds can go. What happens if, you know, back in the day we talked about Miami possibly being underwater.
Yeah.
What happens?
Right.
So we go to that place, right? And when it comes to an EP role, I don't look at myself as an individual, as an EP, but what it has given me is insight in the entire aspect of building story and looking at how we hire people and how we tell stories and how we direct and how we are on set. And it's a big puzzle. And being offered that role and being a part of that role on Silo has made me see how it all can come together and how I like to work.
It's interesting what you say about science fiction. Obviously, science fiction is a term that maybe comes quite loaded, right? But it's speculative fiction, whether it be fantasy, whether it be science fiction. And it kind of, that's storytelling for me without boundaries. Like, you can do absolutely anything because it's always human drama. That's what makes all drama work. And it doesn't matter whether there are zombies, whether there's a silo, whether you're in space, whatnot, you know, but do you, you know, when you look at, I mean, you've done a lot of speculative fiction yourself. Like, is that something that appeals to you, that idea?
Well done, he changed it. We both know what he did.
I live for this stuff, but genuinely, the fact that there are no guardrails and you can do anything, is that exciting to you both about this as a genre?
For me, it's creative freedom.
Yes, and it's what we provide at Apple TV Plus. We want to provide that for great storytellers, and because we want to be the place that matches an audience that's very passionate and the great storyteller that wants to tell their story.
Fantastic. Well, long may it continue. And of course, if it doesn't, I have your email.
You do.
Well done.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. That was the Silo interview. I hope you enjoyed that. And feel free to obviously email Tim Cook if you don't.
Next week, Elon Musk.
Next week, Elon Musk and Donald Trump.
Donald Trump.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, we're in the big leagues, boy.
Who's the other one?
We're in the big leagues.
Amazon guy.
Jeff Bezos.
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah. He'll be on. They'll all want to do it, boy. They'll all want to do it now. Yeah. All of them. Now, Ted Sarandos is going to be on as well. Yeah. All of the big movers and shakers.
My favorite telly strand.
With the Grand
Donald Marsh. Trump, my favorite telly.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Yeah, well done.
Okay, good. Mm. Well, that's what we've been watching, who we've been talking to, and where we've been staying, and how we've been flying, which is an extended version of that first sequence of the podcast. But let's move on now to our listener question. Okay, who, or indeed what, do you have for us this week?
Okay, so I was laughing at this a little bit earlier when you were telling your anecdote, because it's going to seem as if I've chosen this on purpose, but it's just a coincidence, okay?
What's the best thing on Apple TV Plus?
What's the best Apple product?
No. Okay, let me just read it and it'll make sense. Okay. Oh, also, apologies to the listener because I accidentally cut off their name and I can't find the original.
Great.
But it's an Aussie listener, so, you know.
Well, that narrows it down.
It's an Aussie friend.
Colin?
And he, it's Colin.
Bruce.
And he...
Skipper.
Careful. He, a bouncer.
Dame Edna.
He or she says, "Hi team, question for the mailbag. While we're looking at the end of year list, how about a ranking of which platform has the best year?" For me,
well,
for me, I think, right, so I'm just going to, just let me read this out, okay, because it's not, I haven't doctored this. For me, I think Apple TV Plus, bracket, slow horses, Silo, disclaimer, had an excellent year. While Netflix also had a good run with Supercell, Nobody Wants This, The Perfect Couple and Three Body Problem, albeit with far more content. And then Disney had Shogun, my show of the year, but not a lot else. Noting I'm in Australia, so platforms might be slightly off, what's your pick of platform of the year?
I mean, look, my close personal friend Tim Cook would absolutely demand I say, do you know what? It is a difficult one. I can't give away too much about our shows of the year list because that's being held back for the Review of the Year special. But I would say, if we're looking at the top, do you know, I'm gonna subtly bring it up here without referring to it. Do you know what? I would say it's not a clean sweep. If you look at our top 10, I would say many different services are represented.
Mm-hmm. Mm. My answer's Apple, and that's why I was laughing because it genuinely is because Bad Sisters, Shrinking, Slow Horses, Bad Monkey, you know,
Constellation, Dark Matter,
Boo.
For All Mankind,
Schmigadoon.
Look, hey, in the interest of fairness and balance and proper journalism, we have to reference the shit shows as well, Time Bandits.
Yes, of course. What's yours, Boyd?
Is the question what's particularly relating to streamers, or it can be any outlet? Because I always think with this question,
platform,
you know, we forget iPlayer. You know, I mean,
yeah,
all the great BBC 4OD. Shows.
Yeah. Channel 5's 4OD. Had a storming year.
5, yeah, 4OD. Channel 4.co.uk. Yeah, all those great thrillers on Channel 5.
ITVX.
No, but seriously, BBC has had a fantastic year, I think. But if we're talking, I think the question is really talking about streamers on the subscription services. I mean, Apple is brilliant, but good year for Disney Plus as well. I'm surprised you haven't.
Oh, yes.
You know,
Rivals,
yeah. And more, which we'll get on to. So it's really tough, but I think when if you go, what service would you, if you wanted to entertain yourself between now, you know, over Christmas, and you've switched on a service and to get the most streets possible out of it at this moment, I do think it's Apple, probably. Yeah, I mean,
we're not getting paid, guys.
No, we're not.
Sadly.
Paid. Unfortunately.
Yeah, more's the pity.
If only you'd pulled your finger out with Tim.
We've kind of been saying this for years, like, haven't we? I mean, I remember when Apple TV Plus first started, and we wrote about it in the actual magazine that used to exist of Pilot TV.
Yep.
R.I.P.
And and the morning show, you know, from then on. Yes. They've always had incredibly watchable, exciting, addictive shows. And because there are a few of them than Netflix. I mean, Netflix probably had, if you actually came up with a number of must-see shows, you'd probably get just as many, if not more, on Netflix.
But
you have to wade through the dross, frankly.
Yeah.
Because they just make so much stuff.
Because they've got prodigious output,
The answer probably is Apple TV Plus. Yeah.
You've just reminded me, that's the other thing that I've been watching, is that I've started on series 3 of The Morning Show.
Oh,
yeah.
Good.
Which
good.
I'm enjoying.
Continuing the Apple messaging. This is good.
No.
After the crackers, cuckoo bomb.
Oh, I didn't mind it.
Well, 3 is better than 2. So.
Yeah, 3 is good. 2 is terrible.
I wouldn't say it's terrible.
Not terrible. Like, it's still good TV, but it's nowhere near as good as the other
seasons. I couldn't bring myself to watch it again.
No, but I mean, that's not the benchmark.
It's literally the benchmark. It's my benchmark.
It's Boydie's benchmark. How watchable.
Rewatchability. Yeah, it's absolutely
I like new stuff. Anyway.
I mean, I'm with you. We've talked about this particular question in terms of recommended streaming services a lot, and I think it does come down to Netflix, who have the most output, but their quality spans the entire spectrum, and then Apple, which has the least output, but they are the most consistently good. Like, they have the highest hit-to-miss ratio, I would say.
Yeah.
Correct.
We are in consensus.
Mm.
Excellent.
Very
rare. Answer that question. Yeah, that is Tim Cook,
thrilled.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's subscribing to Pilot Plus as we speak. Yeah.
Listen, Timmy, while you're listening, if you could leave us a review, a 5-star review, that'd be great.
Yeah, that's true.
On Apple Podcasts.
Tim, please do head over there and leave us a 5-star rating.
Sure.
On
in
Apple
fact, Podcasts. Buy us a Pat Val cake.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Just
that's true.
If you're, you can buy us one of those, what's that VR thing called? The VR, you know, headset thing called?
Can't eat that, boy,
do you want that?
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
I think you could buy us a Pat Val cake, you could probably buy us Pat Val.
I wouldn't mind that.
Well, that's true. Those headset things are fantastic. If you're just like watching films, it's like being in a cinema.
A Vision Pro, Boydie, is what you're talking about.
A Vision Pro, yes. Thank you. Have you got one already?
No.
Okay. Have you tried it out?
I've tried it out.
Of course you have.
Pat Val, side note, I found a picture the other day. I was scrolling through. When I was looking, actually, for a nice picture to celebrate Boyd's birth, I found a picture of you holding up said Pat Val cake.
Oh, so I'm the picture that was banned? The picture that Boydie made me delete from social media, that one?
No, not that one.
Because that was a horrendous shot.
Exactly.
Oh my God, can we just relive that moment where James posted that absolutely fucking horrendous picture of you? I would actually...
But you know what? There's a sequel to that. You just reminded me. When I was in New York, which this just reminded me, because the night before I went to New York, I went to football with Dermot and friends. And I took a selfie of me and Dermot and our mate. And it's one of the worst pictures of me. It's even worse. I look like a monster in it. I showed my friends in New York, we got there because we were just talking about bad selfies, and they were in hysterics about how bad it was. I think I might have deleted it. So yeah, there's a follow-up. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to post this Pat Val cake in time for this to come out. So if anyone wants to see what the much talked about delicious Pat Val cake looked like. And it also features Stephanie Seelan in the picture, so treat.
An extra treat
sometime host of this podcast.
Yes. True. And also, crucially, the third member of the fantastic podcast, Basic Bingers.
May it rest in peace. Anything else? Are we done with the postbag? Are you finished?
Yeah, it's just one question,
okay,
right?
Okay, just checking.
We usually have one question.
I know,
unless
is true.
Unless we're doing a live format change.
Yeah, well, that's it.
You have
a switching it up without having
communicated. We're lucky if we get one, let's face it. So
yeah, that is true.
This is an interesting development.
I'm joshing me.
Right, get that ugly picture, James.
Right, that's it. We're putting it up again. So Kay can put it on her Instas.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, that is the most bag. If you would like to communicate with us on the various social media formats, there is only one game in town, really, and it is at Pilot TV Pod. That you can do it across Instagram, across Blue Sky, across Twitter. We have a new social media editor, Harry, who started today as we record.
Welcome, Harry.
Welcome, Harry. So he's going to be all over our social stuff.
Are we recording this on video, by the way?
We are, Boydie.
Oh, yes. God, I forgot about that.
That's it.
It doesn't come up on the screens. It needs to come up on the screens.
Are you worried about your angles?
That's
I'm
it.
About everything now.
Yes, we are going live.
Doing all sorts.
Got trauma. PTSD.
We're out on the YouTubes. Sorry
now, also, just a quick one. You didn't mention subreddit, and you That's true. You missed it last week as well.
That is true. You can put it. So when I said there was only one game in town, what I actually meant is you can do it Instagram, you can do it on Blue Sky, you can do it on Subreddit, you can do it on Twitter. Many, many games, any platform you like. Just drop them around a Kay's house, anything you like, just whatever you want.
And a cake. Shout out to Louise as well, because she always, once a week, she sends me the link to the postbag.
So that you don't have to go digging around, rummaging in the subreddit.
Yeah, seeing stuff I don't want to see. Yeah, so thank you, Louise.
That's fair. Okie dokie. What comes next on the podcast? Somebody remind me.
Well, news would be good.
News, you say? News. Okay, news it is. What's been happening in the world of news?
Well, they announced the Golden Globe nominations, which is always fun.
I mean...
it is, though, isn't it? It's like,
I mean, I guess it is fun.
I know. Look, I say this every year about the Golden Globes. It is a preposterous thing, entity. It's basically about 110 people voting who are kind of like a self-selecting group of hacks, basically.
all voting. Surely that's a good thing.
Well, there's only 110 of them or whatever. I plucked that figure out. It's about 100 and something people voting for this thing. You how many people, like 6,000 people voting in the BAFTAs and the Oscars?
Got it.
So I think it's inherently not a good thing, as I would say. And they've went through various scandals about lack of diversity and all of that. Mm. But it's back, it's, you know, televised live in America. I think it's CBS this year. Anyway, but what I always say is the nominations are actually often really good. Like, because... you know, that among the people who are voting, they vote for TV and film stuff. So, you know, I always think, oh, actually, you know, because there are, it doesn't have to appeal to a huge mass group of people like the BAFTAs and the Oscars too. You're more likely to get slightly more quirky, interesting shows like The Substance, for example, the film, which is my favorite film of the year. That has got loads of Golden Globe nominations, which has been quite a big surprise. And people are like, oh, wow, amazing. Maybe it'll stand a chance to be a Oscars film as well. But I digress. Because the TV lists...
I can't get online, so I'm listening with my listening ears.
Well, I'll tell you then.
Yeah.
Best TV series drama, Dave the Jackal. Dave the Jackal. The Diplomat. This is full of favourites of our shows. The Diplomat, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Shogun.
Oh, amazing.
Slow Horses.
Oops.
And really interestingly, I think... Squid Game Season 2, which hasn't...
Hang on, what?
Yes, indeed.
Oh, honestly, it makes me want to murder each and every one of them.
Well, I don't think I'll get this reaction.
It's just so annoying. It's like, first of all, it's literally embargoed until Boxing Day. So right off there, I'm fairly certain that should count as some kind of embargo breach.
Brilliant.
And it's just always, oh, look at us, we've seen Season 2 already. Oh, well done.
Yep.
All I would say, I mean, it feels like you're self-parody at the moment because this is what you do every week.
I mean, look, that is accurate.
You're literally always going, oh, I've watched this. You guys don't have the screen.
Yeah, exactly. He could be a member of the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
I'm ahead of the muggles, the normies.
Yeah,
it's true. It is true.
Hypocrisy, thy name is James.
I set myself up there. Yeah. But at least I don't stage an awards ceremony around my bellendery.
Is it the
case? That sounds really...
I know, yes.
Steady. As a sentence.
Steady,
like,
yeah, steady on.
On the
films, I'm trying to think. No, actually, they're on. I was about to say, like, sometimes films haven't come out yet.
Well, The Substance is also in the musical or comedy category. So home how stupid these fucking things are.
I know. Anyway,
What's your blood pressure, James?
I'm glad I mentioned that. Squid Game's in it.
Unbelievable.
It is incredible. I do think that's really funny. Musical or comedy, best TV series, Abbott Elementary.
Yes.
The Bear, which is still, so this is like Season 3, they're still calling it a comedy. That's never going to change.
Yeah.
The Gentleman, which is the Guy Ritchie, which is very entertaining.
Yeah.
Nobody Wants This.
Yes.
Very on the button.
Come on.
To get that already. Only went out like about a few weeks ago. Only Murders in the Building, which I've, by the way, finished. I don't think I even said it on the show, but I'm really enjoyed this season, much more than last season. I thought that they pulled it out of the bag in the end. And Hacks, the aforementioned Hacks.
Brilliant.
Which I think might actually triumph this time.
Did they watch it on the Virgin flight?
Maybe they got the DVD from HMV. Other DVD outlets are available. Best TV limited series, anthology, or motion picture made for television is the snappy title of this category. And it features Baby Reindeer, Disclaimer, Monsters, The Lyle and Eric Menendez Story, The Penguin, which, by the way, did you finish The Penguin?
I didn't know.
Everyone's going on about how brilliant The Penguin is.
Yes, they are.
So I think we need to...
I watched quite a few episodes, but I haven't got around to finishing the final
few. Do you know where that needs to go? On your sofa list.
It does,
The Penguin, Ripley.
Yeah, your favorite.
Very pleased. And True Detective, Night Country, also very pleased. That's a good list, that is. And I'll just go through, I won't go through every single category because we'll be here till even later than we actually planned on being here till. But female actor, best performance, Kathy Bates in Matlock. Now, Matlock, right, has got some weird, really good reviews, by the way. And we kind of like dismissed it a bit, didn't we? It's a kind of procedural, you know, show that doesn't, but apparently there's some really good episodes of Matlock coming up. And she's got a lot of acclaim. Kathy Bates, Emma Darcy, House of the Dragon, Maya Erskine, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Keira Knightley for Black Doves, which again is very on the button.
Yeah.
To get, I mean, I was looking at Joe Barton's Instagrammed about this, and I don't think he could believe how quickly they've been nominated. He's got nominations already. Because if you're in the Emmys, it's going to be like next year in about, you know, 9 months' time or whatever. Kerry Russell, The Diplomat, and Anna Sawai Shogun. Again, that's a really good list. And for actor, Donald Glover, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Jake Gyllenhaal, Presumed Innocent, Gary Oldman, Slow Horses, this is heavyweight bunch, Eddie Redmayne, Day of the Jackal, Hiroyuki Sanada, Shogun, and Billy Bob Thornton for Landman.
All great performances.
All great performances. Shall I go into musical comedy? No. I'll glance over. Gene Smart's nominated for musical comedy, for Hacks.
Wait, did you say musical or comedy?
A best performance by acting in musical comedy. Yeah, they group that together. Musical comedy. Yeah,
they group it together and then fill it with things that are neither. Generally,
yeah. Yeah. Movie, please. Jason Segel of Shrinking Fame is nominated.
Sorry, what's his name?
Segel. I'm calling him Segel.
He's
Segel.
French.
Segel.
Segel.
Jason.
Ted Danson. A Man on the Inside, which is another show that we need to go back to.
Do we though?
Yes, we do. I actually. Gosh, it's like you guys don't listen to me. I did a reverse marriage.
Do you remember? I know you did.
And I.
You know what? Podcast discovery I made while I was in America, which is shot into my top three podcasts. Ted Danson his own podcast, and it's fantastic.
He talked about Curb, didn't he?
He talked about Curb because he's got what's his name on as a guest, and he had he has brilliant guests on. Yeah, he's really good. He's really entertaining. JB Smoove, there we go. That's the name I was grasping for on his most recent podcast. They talked about Curb a lot. Yeah, female actor in a limited series, anthology series. Cate Blanchett, Jodie Foster, friend of the pod, has appeared on the pod.
Jodie Foster.
It's a real stretch.
Yeah, it's a real stretch. Sofia Vergara, Griselda, Naomi Watts, Feud, Kristen Milioti, who's brilliant in The Penguin. Even I say that, having what we've seen of it. And here's the controversial one, Kate Winslet for The Regime.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
That's
good performance. I mean, just not a good show.
Yeah.
Stinker.
Bit of a disappointing show. And then male actor, Colin Farrell for the aforementioned Penguin, Richard Gadd for Baby Reindeer, I mean, the little guy that could. Kevin Kline, disclaimer.
Wow.
Cooper Koch for Monsters. Ewan McGregor for Gentleman in Moscow, remember that? We reviewed that. Yeah.
Excellent moustache action.
And best of all, Andrew Scott for Ripley. I won't go into the supporting.
No, don't feel the
No, because it's too many. But yeah, I'm saying, back to my original point, really good lists, all of them.
Yeah.
It just so happens that it's the Golden Globes and it's, you know.
It's like when the, and not naming no names, when film publications come out with their best of list for the year and they include films they've seen at festivals that aren't out until the next year. And I'm just like, don't do that.
You know what's the worst of all for that? You know, Sight and Sound. I was looking at the Sight and Sound list of films of the year earlier this morning. And they'll include stuff that hasn't got a distributor.
Yeah.
You know, that might not even ever come out.
They were kind of who I really enjoyed.
Okay, I was going to say, we said we weren't going to mention it. Yeah.
Oh, well, we want to mention it. They can take it.
It is Sight and Sound.
It's madness. Yeah,
yes.
No, I agree.
But
yeah.
The Squid Game thing is just like, no. Just no.
Yeah, it's wrong. Yeah, it's a big problem.
Okay, well, they'll stop doing it as long as you stop doing it, James. So, you know.
Will they, though?
Fair is fair.
I don't think they will.
I don't think he will either.
No, I will not. Absolutely not. And, you know, I haven't actually watched the Squid Game episodes yet, but rest assured that when I do, I will bang on about them on this podcast, regardless of whether you guys have seen them. But look, you've buried the lead in terms of news, because that is not the big news of the week, Boydie. The big news of the week, as I think we all know, is that Sheree Agdashloo of The Expanse has been cast in The Wheel of Time as Elida, the Aes Sedai of the Red Aja, and I am stoked.
The thingy what's it, the doobie thingy.
That's it, Oh, yeah. My beloved Sheree Agdashloo.
Yeah, she's great. Yeah.
Couldn't be more excited about that bit of casting.
Not. Yeah, I'm amazed that show's still going.
Hey, to be honest, I think Amazon are amazing. Yeah. It's a great show that Amazon show no love to at all because they're so focused on the Lord of the Ring, the Lord.
Yeah, yeah.
But I love it.
I thought you were going to talk about how the Friday Night Lights reboot has been confirmed.
I was going to mention this a few weeks ago when it was first announced. But yeah, that's an interesting one. I must recommend that to Beth, see if she'll watch that. I'm excited about that.
Yeah.
I love Friday Night Lights.
Interesting, yeah, yeah. Interesting.
Not sure it needs a reboot, but I do love it.
I think it probably is ripe for a reboot, I think, because the whole fundamental basis of that show, of, you know, college football and athletes and the pressures they face and all of that, this never goes away.
Neither does the show, but as well.
No, but I mean, having new stories and new cast, you know, in that world, in that milieu. If I can use that word, and I have.
What details do you know? So presumably
the official logline for the series says, following a devastating hurricane, a ragtag high school football team and their damaged interim coach make an unlikely bid for a Texas high school state championship, becoming a beacon of light for their own. So it sounds like it's like just a new, whole new world.
That's the way to do it. So set in that, the same sort of idea.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
And the original series showrunner is working on it. Jason Katims.
Yeah. Nice.
And okay. Peter Berg's. So basically, the creative team is back, or certainly involved, and it's a new story, new characters, etc.
Kay will very be excited. Kay will very be excited.
It's guaranteed to make me very be excited. Is that?
it is. Well, because obviously we did Secret Level last week, and I know how psyched you were, Kay, that there was a Warhammer 40,000 installment,
dude,
as part of Secret Level.
As you know, I was very excited because each episode was 20 minutes.
That's right. Yeah, so, 17, in fact.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Actually, yeah.
It was 17 minutes. Better 17 still. Minutes of incomprehensible nonsense to you, but it was, it was interesting. But Henry Cavill, who is apparently the God Emperor of the Warhammer universe, he has finalized his deal to bring Warhammer 40,000 into the world. So he hasn't given any details at all, but he says all the details are ironed out, you know, but only he knows them. And it's coming. It's on its way. They're going to be serious. There's going to be all sorts of stuff.
I made the mistake of giving a little inch there. I showed a bit of interest.
Yeah. It's going to be on Prime.
Reverse. Okay. Reverse.
Yeah.
Back
very
out.
Much reversing out this.
I'm very happy about that.
ITV have commissioned a heart-stopping suspenseful crime thriller called Saviour. It's written by first-time screenwriter Imran Mahmood. And apparently it's... let me tell you the premise. It sounds quite good, actually. The drama introduces us to a well-brought-up medical student, Ben, who goes to a fancy dress party dressed in a police uniform. He only has eyes for this girl, and when he sees her being attacked by a man on his way home, he has no choice but to intervene, urged on by a bystander, who presumes he is a real-life police officer. He chases the man into a tunnel, and we hear the faint hum of an oncoming train. Mm-hmm. Only Ben is the one... to emerge, so we realise he's the only one alive. Mm. And he makes a desperate call to his dad, Eddie, whose uniform he borrowed.
Good premise.
It's a good premise.
Really great premise, yeah. I'm excited about that. That's a bit of news for you.
Good bit of news. I didn't mention, by the way, Wheel of Time, March the 13th.
Oh, yeah,
that's when it's coming back. Right. We've also had another day, and the other day is an important one. So it's February the 20th, and that is when Reacher is back on our screens.
Yes.
There was a Reacher trailer, and we saw Paulie. So Paulie is the character from that story who's supposed to be the monster that dwarfs Reacher, and this guy is massive, absolutely massive. You should watch the trailer. It's genuinely hilarious. I'm very, 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 very excited to see Reacher coming back.
My favourite bit of news of the week is concerns. I missed this completely when it was announced, apparently, like about a week ago or something. Do you know about this? Sarah Jessica Parker, what she's doing?
No.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
A new series of Divorce.
No, there is a new series of And Just Like That, which she talked about. Was interviewed at an event in Saudi Arabia, controversially, and she talked about how the next series of And Just Like That, the series season 3, feels really big, robust and exciting. There's many new stories with additional characters. There's a growth with new faces. It sounds horrible. Carrie has a wonderful storyline. The story takes some big swings and we fold some big ideas into those big swings, and there are some new female characters. But so she's saying it's brilliant.
And mercifully, Che, no longer there.
Yeah, that which is mercy, actually. Mm-hmm. But no, but what she mentions in part, so she's talking about all this stuff, right? And in this article I'm reading, in passing, just mentions this thing. I'm like, that is incredible. She's joining the jury for the Booker Prize.
What?
Yes. She is on the Booker Prize jury, which is basically like five people who have to read 170 books.
She loves by the way. Books.
She does love the books. She talks about she talks about how honoured she is to
that
be.
That is a massive honour.
It's huge, but it's just completely bizarre. It's like, how did no one mention this?
Well, yeah, and also it's going to get people talking about the awards, which is a good thing.
Oh, no, I think it's a good thing.
Meanwhile,
but
Reese Witherspoon's probably furious.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. You know. But I'm sure she'll be next now that they've thrown down the gauntlet of Hollywood, putting a Hollywood A-lister in there. There's like, you know, the rest of the jury is like, you know, Roddy Doyle, I think, is there, famed author. There's like a literary critic and, another book journalist. It could be, right.
What about you? Do they not remember you were on Simon
exactly,
Mayo?
Kay. Were you, and you edited the books in Heat?
I was books editor.
Imagine if you were asked to go on the jury, right, for the Booker Prize. You go, I've got to read 170 books, but it's worth it because I want to be mm-hmm. And then they'll go, and you go, who else is on the jury? And they go, oh, we've got Roddy Doyle and Sarah Jessica Parker. You'd be like, what the fuck?
To be fair, though, Boydie, you'd only really be able to do it if the authors were in the room with you when you were talking about it.
I mean, that is true.
Unless he could give them a good slagging to the face, he's not interested.
No, I was studying. But yeah, I think it's incredible. So yeah, SJP, Booker, bring it on.
Is that it for news? Are we done with news?
I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like we're done with news. Let's move on to reviews. Or should I call it review? But before we do, to be honest, there is one other thing we should do. We got a guest. We do have a guest on this week's show. So as you will soon discover, apart from Tim Cook and Rebecca Ferguson, we also have Holiday Granger. So as you'll soon discover, Strike does return to our screens this week with Tom Edge, and he's adapting the sixth book in the Strike series, the Cormoran Strike series. This is the Ink Black Heart, in which Tom Burke's Strike and Holiday Granger's Robin take a leaf out of mine and Boydie's book and become entirely befuddled by the world of adult animation. So that's nice. I got on a Zoom with Holiday Granger to talk all about the latest case, and this is what happened. Welcome, Holiday Granger, back to the podcast. Now, we spoke, I think, a couple of years ago for Trouble Blood, and I think at that time you had just finished reading The Ink Black Heart, and I remember you saying that it was not only your favourite of all the Strike novels, but you preferred it to all the Harry Potters as well, which obviously that's quite a big claim, which you must now obviously justify.
That's quite a big claim. I must have been like high on the reading of it. I love the Harry Potter books. I also now, I'd probably Running Grave has probably topped it. But no, I did. I really loved Ink Black Heart when I was reading it. Yeah. I was really into it. I am still into it, obviously. I got super into it. But as I was reading it, I got to the end and I was just like, how are they going to translate this into TV though? Because it's lit. I mean, half of it is in an internet chat room, which is like really difficult to read anyway. But I mean, to watch on screen. But I think Tom Edge, who adapts them, has done such a brilliant job at managing to get as much character-based stuff as possible as you can without being in their heads and in their the sort of all the different characters on the internet forum. I think that everyone's done a great job.
That's an interesting point. So I have all the books on my shelf. They're just out of camera shot here, but I have them there.
I think mine are actually in my camera shot.
Yes, I can see them behind you. See, yeah, always appreciate a Zoom when the books are in the background because I get very nosy about people's books. But I don't read them until after I've seen the series, because I first experienced it through the series, so I kind of feel like I have to now watch it this way. And same with the Slow Horses books as well.
Oh, that's really interesting. Yeah.
So is it just a chat room in the novel, whereas obviously it's almost like a game, it's very visual in the show?
Yes. Yeah, you haven't read the book yet?
Seen the first two episodes of this series, though.
So in the book, the sort of there is like, the game is kind of like a chat room. So you sort of see all the interlinking and you're privy to all the deceptions of like the halfling members and all the characters. And you sort of, so as a reader, you are in there with each character's deceptions and guessing alongside it. And then of course there's lots of little characters that are also, because the book's so big, that have much sort of wider kind of emotional, psychological life in the book. But Tom's managed to kind of bring as much as possible in to the on-screen version that is there. And it makes sense. You know, sometimes when you're reading the book, you're like, how do you do this in four episodes? And anyone understands what's happening? But I think, yeah, they've done a really good job. So I'm looking forward to seeing it.
But actually, it's four episodes is quite condensed, because in this streaming era, right, like we're used to seeing certainly literary adaptation being 8, 9, 10, you know, you see, it feels quite British to do everything in just four, to just kind of crunch it right down. Do you think it benefits from being quite condensed?
Yeah, I do. I think, I don't know if Tom Edge would probably say the same thing as he's writing it. But I think, you know, it's certainly the plot becomes very succinct, and there is always a sort of emphasis is sort of given to Strike and Robin's relationship, I think, because you're sort of they're the people that you're really following. And in this, I think Edie Leadwell, they pick out the characters that are the ones that the sort of audience is going to sort of put their heart into. And I think so Edie Leadwell is the sort of, I guess, the protagonist in this one, even though she dies at the beginning. But, you know, as with like Troubled Blood, and you're kind of following Margot in Ink Back Heart, even you're kind of finding more and more out about Edie as it goes along. And because we invest in her at the beginning, I think everyone's really kind of invested in finding out who Anami is, who's been like, who made her life hell.
And what I love about all of these particular books is that they all have a very distinct sort of flavor to them. They feel very, very different from each other. It's not just insert killer here, does awful things, catch person there. Like, and this takes on the world of adult animation, which is a massive, massive thing. And the fandom is obsessive. That something that you've, like, are you a secret Crunchyroll subscriber? Are you a massive Rick and Morty fan? I don't know. Like, are you into that kind of stuff? Are you sort of all just peripherally aware of it?
I'm not even even when we sort of filmed the Comic-Con scenes for this, I was walking around going, I have no idea who these characters are. but I think that's kind of also, I find it fascinating. And I'm also not on, you know, I'm not on social media. I've never sort of been on an internet forum. And I find that world fascinating because of that as well. So I think reading this and sort of having the kind of the ideas of, you know, like adult fantasy fiction, and also forums and trolling and that kind of, like, I, you know, I'm sort of very departed from that world. So it's quite, I think that's also probably why I quite like the sort of deep dive into it.
I was going to say, because obviously this, you know, something about this book clearly resonated with you when you first read it, and this story, like, was it that this is almost like a fantasy because it's a world that just feels very alien to your life?
Yes, probably.
The internet's a scary place, I think it's fairly safe to say. Yeah. And I think this really kind of, it's emblematic of that.
But that's also, I think it is what I found fascinating, because it is that idea of, you know, when you're in the internet forums, as you're reading it, you're kind of with the characters and what they're, but also what they're presenting. So everyone in a way is kind of acting, they're presenting a version of themselves. And I do find that really fascinating that everyone does that now. Not everyone, you know, but, you know, that's really generalistic, but you know, that this is this sort of like idea of who you are and who you present, and that is such a sort of pervasive part of our society now, that I also have sort of no real knowledge of because I'm not on social media, so I really sit on people's peripheries intrigued by it all.
You're absolutely right though, because it is, because, you know, you'll have your public persona, your acting persona, you know, people on the internet will have their Instagram persona, and like, that's not their real life, that's not their real self. So it is all sort of masks and mirrors where everyone's kind of acting and putting on these different personas for other people.
I guess
that's the crux of this story, isn't it? Because we have this character Anami, who is an online persona, and it's trying to get behind that mask and find out who or what this person is who's, you know, behind it all.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, and, you know, and in this book there's some, you know, the Harvening is a sort of like extreme rightist like terrorist group, and, you know, the fact that they can infiltrate and become you know, people just putting on a persona and people really doing very, very dangerous things with that. And they're kind of the guessing who's doing what, I think, is what is quite intriguing about this book too.
I mean, this series, I guess, picks up pretty much exactly where Troubled Blood finishes, doesn't it? In that these scenes kind of overlap. So we've got Robin's birthday. Yeah. And I think it's fairly safe to say that it brings the kind of will they, won't they situation to a rather excruciating head here, where there's a kind of that Almost Kiss, which kind of, I guess, sets the tone for this season, because it makes Robin and Strike's relationship very, very awkward. Do you think that's fair to say?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it begins with, you know, we're right into Robin's birthday and them getting quite close and friendly and having a lovely time. You know, we see so little of that, of Strike and Robin actually with their guard down, enjoying each other's company. And then very quickly, they're in two different mindsets. Strike leans in for a kiss and Robin pulls away. And, you know, and then so the rest of the series is just sort of like the fallout of that. And you can see the thought process on both the characters of like, shouldn't have done that very quickly. And then it becomes about them sort of navigating that within the workplace and refinding their friendship again and where that leads.
I mean, do you think that tension between those characters is essentially the sort of secret sauce to Strike? Because obviously the mysteries are excellent, the plots are brilliant, but I do wonder whether it's that character dynamic in particular that draws people in and keeps them coming back.
Yeah, I think that is a big part of it. And also how invested Strike and Robin are. They're invested in the business and therefore the story that they're investigating, and each other in different ways, and the way that all kind of interlinks. But yeah, I mean, we all want them to get together. But I mean, would any of us be interested if they did? Would we want to carry on watching? So we don't want to get them together yet. Get them to get together just yet.
It's the Mulder and Scully conundrum, isn't it? The will they, won't they? Yeah, cannot be a do they, otherwise you kind of have a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you know, as a reader, how do you read those books, and do you do them with your Robin head on, or are you able to kind of separate the role from just enjoying the fiction?
I think I'm able to separate. I mean, now I do. I mean, Tom is Strike as I read the books in my head, and Robin looks like me. But but apart from that, I can enjoy the books for what they are as I'm reading them. And then I go back and sort of read them like for work, if you will, before we start the
series. You reread them again specifically before you start shooting?
Yeah.
Oh wow.
Yeah, I might do. Sometimes I don't, depending on if the plot's quite different, I'll find it easier to sort of stick in the script so I don't confuse myself. But most of the time I'd reread them again just to sort of get the little in between bits and thoughts of character. Because the you know, the adaptations are always so close to the heart of the books that it's often quite easy to get into Robin's mindset when it's kind of all there on the page in books.
You know, you obviously read these books. Are crime mystery novels, are they something that you enjoy?
I you know what, I'm not actually into reading them, but I do like watching. I love crime fiction. I'm very much into I think everything I'm watching at the moment is sort of crime fiction somewhere.
Oh, crap. Can you recommend something? What is it you are watching at the moment? I'm fascinated.
So I'm watching Can't Wait Till Thursday when the next set of The Jackal comes out.
So good.
Love it. So good. So good. Loving it. Eddie Redmayne is fantastic. I mean, everyone's fantastic in it. While I'm waiting for the next set of that to come out, I just... disclaimer.
Oh, yes.
Alfonso Cuarón, Kate Blanchett, which is also a sort of, I guess, a kind of like, you know, detective kind of a thing, you know, investigation. Yeah. Loving those two at the moment.
Do you watch your series back? Do you ever, when you've done Strike, are you done with it? Do you watch your episodes?
I did used to. I don't so much anymore, but I always feel like I should.
Just so you can remember where you left it off, presumably.
Well, yeah, yes. And also it feels polite. I mean, you know, when you work with people and they put so much effort in, I feel like I should watch it too. I mean, now I'm getting, because we've sort of overtaken, or the books have overtaken us, I'm kind of weirdly, because I'm already into, I've already read Running Grave, I'm already into kind of forward thinking to that I sort of, probably won't watching Black Heart, because it's like I'm kind of, I've moved on.
Yeah, you've moved on. You're on the next story now.
But maybe I will. I should do. And then I can then reread Running Grave again to get back into it next time.
Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Venetia Hall, the character that Robin creates when she brushes out. But we have a new character. We have Jessica, the art student, in this one as well.
Yes.
And I remember, which is loads and loads of fun. And it feels like for Robin that putting on the wig, you know, the contact lenses in Venetia's case, you know, adopting the accent, it all lets her kind of slip into these personas. I wondered, like, is that true of you as well? Do you find the accessories, you know, whether it be, you know, wigs, outfits, accents, that those help you get into roles?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, definitely accent for sure. And yeah, wig, all of it, you know, especially even with this, you know, you put on the, in a way, find it difficult to slip back into Robin's voice in the Jessica wig and lenses, you know, because you're sort of you're in that and you're so associated with that that then when if you're halfway through a scene, need to break back into Robin's accent, it just sort of feel a bit weird.
Do you keep Robin's accent between takes normally, or do you end up dropping into your normal voice?
You know what? I don't know. I think I spent so long putting on accents that I think they kind of merge. I think I become really Northern when I'm being Robin. But I started just edging towards Robin as the series finishes. Yeah.
Is there a difference, you know, in the way you relate to a role when you do like the character or if you're playing a character who maybe you don't like as much? Because Lucrezia Borgia, obviously, not necessarily everyone's favourite person in the world. But probably loads of fun to play, right?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I do think there is an element of you sort of... It is always more fun playing... like confident characters, or because you become confident. Like when you're, you know, it is quite exhausting if you're playing anxious people, or because you have to put yourself, your body has to go there, and so it is. So there is a sort of element of always wanting to sort of, if you can easily engage with the character yourself, then their emotions become much easier to reach and it just becomes like in your body a bit more comfortable.
The Borgias, that was, I guess that was your, would you call that your big break, that role?
I guess so. That was my,
Because you've been acting since you were like five, right? So it's been a while.
But that was my first, like, I guess, American thing, because it's Showtime. So, but yeah, I love that. I like that.
A character of yours I very much like is DCI Carey, obviously, from The Capture. Did you know if The Capture's coming back? Have you spoken to Ben? Is that likely to continue?
It is. We are going to start next year.
Exciting.
Slip that in before Ronnie Gray.
I think I read once that you said that you, after doing, you know, Strike and then doing The Capture, like you got like a raft of essentially detective roles come through, like endless scripts.
Yeah.
Do you find that happens quite a lot?
I mean, like over my career, I have always been surprised by how short-sighted people are. Cause it does seem to happen. You know, I did so many 19th century novels. And I was sort of joking recently to someone that I keep driving old Land Rovers. And I'm like, am I typecast into an old Land Rover because of Robin? Like all my cat, like everyone, even like just... Your job set in the south of France, and it was still an old British Land Rover. And I was like, really?
It's like Luther with a Volvo. This is going to become your screen car.
Yeah, exactly. I do, yeah.
Like I say, loads and loads of TV. There's a lot of stuff going on. I think lots of people are finding solace in TV. And one of the things that's come up a lot recently with our listeners and our readers is that a lot going on in the world at the moment. Not all of it good. We won't get into politics, obviously. But many people are thinking of TV as a way out of this. And lots of the requests, shall we say, have come through for comfort watches. What do people watch when the world is on fire? Do you have, you know, comfort watches that you turn to, shows that you go back to?
Yeah, I think crime fiction always. I mean my comfort watches were always like the sort of Scandi noir, like Killing in the Bridge. And I think once you're into the drama of something, it sucks you into that, and you can depart from, you know, the drama going on in the actual world.
Yeah, it's transportational, isn't it? You want to just be out of wherever you are and into wherever that is.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's why Strike's so successful as well, because it's the drama and it's the romance. You want to get sucked into the
both. Romance.
Yeah, exactly. Which is why, you know, I remember like normal people were so successful over lockdown. Everyone, we just wanted to get sucked into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. How about you? What do you get sucked into?
Do you know what? So for me, it's science fiction, but it's for the same thing that you say. Yeah. Like, you want something that takes you away from here and takes you somewhere else. So for me, like, I mean, to be fair, it's The West Wing more than anything else. But obviously, with everything going on in America at the moment, I can't really watch The West Wing quite in the same way. So whereas sci-fi is often the way to go. And there is a glut of it around at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Holiday. It has been an absolute pleasure. I look forward to seeing the final two episodes, which hopefully the BBC will send me before too long. So we'll find out how it ends. And then on to the running grave.
Yes, exactly. Thank you very much, James.
Thank you.
That was Holiday Granger, and that takes us straight into reviews, and specifically Strike. So you have already heard, Strike is back with an adaptation of The Ink Black Heart, which is the name of a hugely popular animated series in this world that leads to murder, which is, I guess, a synopsis of a number of these particular episodes of our podcast. Boydie,
yes.
Tell us, was this another Strike for Strike?
Pretty much, yeah. I'm a fan of Strike. I know you're a fan of Strike. I'm a fan of Strike. Who knows if Kay's a fan of Strike?
It's not a competition.
Maybe it is a competition.
Okay.
No, it's not a competition. I do enjoy Strike. I think the whole thing is built around the relationship between Cormoran, played by Tom Burke, and Robin, played by your friend Holiday Granger, James, who we just heard from. And their chemistry together is fantastic, and it's like, it just drives the whole thing. And very smartly, I think this... I haven't read this book, by the way. I read a couple of the first two books, I think, because I hosted the first or second...
Of course you did.
...screening of series one or two at the BFI in a Q&A, etc. Now, this series begins with the two of them having dinner together in London, and they're kind of having a lovely merry time. They're kind of drinking a bit, you know. They're not completely drunk, but they're definitely
and like, this is the end, like, this carries on directly from the scene that ends the previous season.
Because obviously this is unrequited, and you know, it's will they, won't they, that's the whole kind of driving
Ross and Rachel,
except obviously Ross and Rachel. I was going to say something horrible about Friends there, but Friends is fine.
There's your poster.
And then there's an excruciating moment.
Oh my God.
Where Cormoran leans in for a kiss and she's like, what? And they just, it is one of the great depictions of excruciation.
Dude, matches up with one day Amber Cormod in that sea.
I died. I actually died. Oh, I died. My spirit left my body. Yeah. My friend Shimon went into red alert.
Yeah.
It was excruciating.
It is all those things, but really well done, because that then establishes this tension between
them. There's an awkwardness all the way through the season, because as awkward as we feel, these characters feel much more awkward, and it permeates the whole season. I thought it was really effective.
Completely, yeah, exactly. Mm. That is the best thing about it, I think. The actual mystery, I have to say, I found the central mystery of this one a bit ridiculous.
Did you?
And a bit...
Is that because it was a cartoon? Because it involved an animation? Not that reason why?
Do you know what it really is? It's not so much that. It's more that this so obviously gives J.K. Rowling, whoever you even mentioned,
writes the books,
a chance to clearly vent all of her issues about
fandom,
about people being accused of selling out, about people with problematic ideas of wokeness. It's all in there, like overflowing from this story.
I didn't even twig.
Oh my God, it is, honestly. And you just can't stop thinking about that. I couldn't anyway, whilst finding the story, some elements of it almost comically kind of like old school in terms of like everyone's a suspect. I'm going to take these people into this room. I'm going to hold forth about why everyone's a suspect in classic kind of Agatha Christie, but slightly.
Whoa. You're not.
Well,
don't come for Poirot.
Don't come for Christie.
I'm slightly invoking Christie. And like, for example, like the case kicks off with this character, Edie, played by Miran Mack, going to see Strike and Hurt's going to see them, and Hurt's saying, Holiday Granger's saying, oh no, we haven't got time to take on new clients. It's all a bit like formulaic, and you know, in the end, they will find time, or they'll have to end up getting involved in the investigation for reasons. And I find this clunkier for some reason.
Is it because you were wrapped up in that sort of blurring of the reality and the fiction?
Yeah, a bit. But I also think genuinely there were some scenes in this as the plot unfolds and as the suspects, for example, I mean, I love Kevin Bishop, right? But Kevin Bishop plays this annoying, self-centered comedian who is involved in the website and the animated series. And he's brilliant. Kevin, he's always really funny. You know, I worked with him on Star Stories back in the day when I played Paul McCartney's lawyer. He's a lovely, funny guy, but he's just kind of like a slightly odd to see him in this doing this shtick as this character. And it's stuff like that. I found it a little bit, I don't know. I mean, I like the fact that she's trying this, like attempting to kind of create a kind of very, a story of our times with all these characters who are kind of like processing a lot of the issues going on in the world, should we say, in creativity, etc. But in the quite, and some of those scenes I found quite, I don't use the clunky word
again. Do you think, because obviously a lot of it is very, you know, fandom centric, gaming centric. Is there a hint of Hello Fellow Kids about it's
for sure, absolutely,
it's rendered.
Yeah, definitely, completely. Yeah,
yeah.
And
that's
partly because
you
can't. If this was written by someone you never heard of, it may not. But I just genuinely thought there were some moments that were like, oh, you know, come on, this is a bit much. But having said that, it's fabulously entertaining, and the crux of it is just those two, and they are brilliant. Together.
But that's
he's fantastically well cast, by the way.
Yeah, Tom Burke is
right from the start.
Brilliant in this,
phenomenal.
I know what you mean. Actually, I think this. I see. Weirdly, I didn't get hung up on the rollingness of it all because I managed to, for whatever reason, completely blank out the fact that she's connected to this while I'm watching it, and I just accept it for what it is within the narrative.
Mm.
And I, you know, obviously I love these characters, I love these stories, I love the way it's put together, I like the construct of the mystery, so I did really enjoy it. As you say, like, as this show has gone on, you come, the mysteries are great, and we're there, but that's not why we're there. We're there for the Robin Strike-ness of it all, and I think this is a really good Robin Strike series. So I think, I would say the character-ness of it, like the character interaction between Robin and Strike, that's almost the best it's ever been. Like, it's really, really awkward, it's really intense, it's really pointed. I really loved all that stuff, and I think certainly as it gets towards the end, it's so well done, and you get so invested in it, almost in like a melodrama soap kind of way. You're just sitting there going, oh my God, what's going to happen? The actual story is quite convoluted. Like, the mystery is quite convoluted.
Saying, yeah.
Yes.
And so interesting, like, talking to Granger about it, like, the fact that in the book, it's all sort of text-based. It's text-based input. So clearly the issue they've had here is how to portray that on screen and not make it dull. So the game has taken on a graphical interface and they have voiceovers doing stuff. So it doesn't feel like a real game because that's not really how games work.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
That's what I would say. Yeah. Yeah. Do games sound that shit?
It's like,
basic.
It's, this is a really shit game.
That's what I was going to say. Sorry. I meant to finish my comments by saying no one has ever seen a game like this in their lives. And it's like created by these like high-end people and then they're turning into a film. I'm like, this is nothing. This is will never happen. It's not going to happen.
You strongly get the impression that J.K. Rowling has A, never played a video game, and B, has never 100%. Watched an animation.
Yeah. I'm now going to do some research by asking some youngsters.
I think that's the television makers rather than her, right? She just wrote the thing. They could depict it how they wanted it.
That is
in the adaptation.
Fair, I think. But yeah, I think you're right. But obviously, I think they're trying to keep it as close to the source as possible. You know, because if they completely reinvent what that is, that I guess
but
provides
more that
problems,
in the book,
it?
It's like communications via the thing. So they can, but I mean, she didn't actually, well, I don't know. I actually haven't read the
book. Well, neither
have
I.
My friend did, but I don't imagine that, you know, she said, shit graphics.
Indeed. Yes.
I have to agree. Right, so I detach from JK. And so when he said that, I was like, oh, shit. Yeah, of course. So I entirely agree with both of you. For me, this is all about that central, you know, Corman and
Robin.
I was going to call it Holiday. And the will they, won't they, and the awkwardness and that partnership. And I love all the different aspects of that. This central mystery is too convoluted for me because it's got these characters, then it's got the assumed character roles, their names, and then it's got all these people pretending to be different people. And if I'm being really honest, like, how many, there's four episodes, is it all?
It's four episodes, yeah.
By the second episode, I didn't really care. I mean, I continued it purely because I wanted to see what happened with Robin. And I didn't care about who did. I mean, I watched it and I was like, oh, okay, yeah, I get that. But it wasn't as compelling as I imagined the previous mysteries have been. I remember watching the first series.
So you watched all four?
Yes.
Then did you watch them all like pretty much in a row?
Kind of, yeah.
Because I watched two and then didn't have the other two and then waited a couple of weeks until I could watch the second two.
Oh, no, I had them all.
And by the time... Well, there you go.
Especially.
But by the time I got to the second two, they were talking about characters and like... I don't know who these people are.
Yeah, you forget because there's too many names. Yeah.
All these names, I'm like, I don't know who any of these people are. Like, who are you talking about? Who is this person?
But crucially, so I felt like that, but did you even care who they were?
I mean, not really. It didn't matter. It didn't affect my enjoyment particularly.
Not my
But I didn't know who they were.
Exactly, but that's the point, isn't it? Because usually with a good, like, with the central mystery, you want to care about these characters and really care about knowing their name.
I can't tell, and Boydie probably had, I'm not going to speak for Boydie, but you might have had the same thing where I couldn't work out whether it was my own ongoing senility or just it wasn't the clearest storytelling. I was like, I don't know who these people are, but that could just be me.
Oh, no, I completely have that experience. Yeah, I think it's the storytelling. It's a lot of
names. And as you say, it's the real names and then the in-game character names.
Yeah,
And then some of them are lying. So it's like you can't even trust what you're hearing.
And they keep going back to this board, right, with all of the characters at the top and they're trying to work out who this person is. And I'm looking at the board thinking, I'm looking at all these, I don't know who anyone on this board is.
Yeah, you've got to still frame it.
I felt a little bit like I needed to stage my own investigation, have my own board just to work out what was going on in this series.
Yeah, the book is about 800 pages long.
Yeah, it's massive. I do have the book at home. I just haven't read it.
Can I just give a shout out to Ruth Sheen?
Yes, I love Ruth Sheen.
As Pat,
Yeah, she's a legend, Ruth Sheen.
Very good.
So good.
Yeah. You remember she appeared late on in It's a Sin and has an incredible scene, like one scene in It's a Sin. She's fantastic, yeah.
Also, just to note, it was directed by Sue Tully. Now, James, I bring this up, right? Obviously, famous director, very good. Yeah.
Line of Duty.
Line of Duty, lots of good shows. And started her career in EastEnders. As Michelle Fowler.
Well, no. She started her career on Grange Hill.
Oh, yes, of course.
I knew Grange Hill. I knew she was in Grange Hill.
Grange Hill first, but crucially, then a soap. So look, once again, another fantastic person begins their career or continues.
Continues after Grange Hill. That's obviously where it started.
I was just checking how many pages the book is.
Gone.
1,024. So they had to distill a 1,000-page novel down to 4 hours.
Okay, that's too flabby, right?
That's a lot.
Well, but there's a discussion to be had about that, isn't it? Because that was the problem with the Harry Potter books, wasn't it? It got to the point where she could not be edited because she got too powerful and they became a little bit self-indulgent.
That's quite a lot.
And now I don't know what the editing process for the Strike novels are.
I think we can guess.
But they're great. Look, but
she sends it in, they print it.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. That may be what happens. But, they're good stories. And for all my sort of like niggles about character names and what was going on, I really enjoyed it. I enjoyed the mystery. Yeah. Obviously, there for the characters. That was what kept me going, and I loved all of that stuff. But yes.
I was just there for the characters.
I enjoyed the mystery as well. I enjoyed the bit where they went to a comic con at one point. What's funny is it's not like San Diego Comic Con, it's one of the London ones. And there is a kind of slightly ramshackle quality to those at the best of times. Yes. I thought they duplicated that quite well.
Yeah.
Strike then, The Int Black Heart, which is a 4-part series. And Boydie, when can we find all of those episodes?
BBC One, Monday, the 16th and Tuesday, the 17th of December, 2024, 9 o'clock. So they're airing them Mondays and Tuesdays for the next 2 weeks, basically.
Okay. Mm. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Now, we can't talk about Dexter Original Sin because none of us have seen it, but some of us may or may not be able to talk about season 2 of Based on a True Story. Now, I don't know if you got to watch season 1. We didn't review it on this podcast, did we?
Season 1 of Based on a True Story. I watched it, so I'm pretty sure.
Because this was a dark kind of thriller comedy starring Kelly Cuoco and Chris Messina, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And this was that they're a pair of podcasters who try to kind of essentially uncover a serial killer by instead of reporting him to the police, getting him on their podcast.
Yes, that's pretty much
broadly speaking, that's season 1, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how does this pick up with season 2? I've not seen this. I don't have it. So
it does pick up a little bit after season 1 ends, and it's still, you've still got that premise is still ongoing, that the serial killer, played by Tom Bateman, who is having interviewed him before, and he's a very
close
British,
personal friend?
Very not close personal friend, but I have interviewed him, quite posh, actor, and he's completely transforms himself into this kind of like hippie-ish almost very American serial killer character. He's off in like a retreat. He's supposed to be, they're encouraging him to get therapy and to cure himself of his serial killing tendencies. He's living in a hammock in this kind of like men's community thing. And Chris Messina's character, Nathan, goes to see him to kind of challenge him. And also, because her sister happens to be there as well, which he notices by looking in his dark glasses, the killer's glasses. So it's pretty much the same thing. The things that are new are Kaylee Cuoco's Ava's character. She's having a lot of hallucinations, I would say, and visions of people, of dead people, and you know, like it does that thing, a trope of like suddenly something horrific appears in her car, and then of course she's imagining it. You know, it's like, yeah, it's quite.
But I'm interested. Is this because of her sleep deprived state?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. And to do with the baby.
I find that less annoying.
Oh, yeah. No, the reason, there are justifiable narrative reasons for it. I just found it a bit tired and mm-hmm. laboured, that whole. And then there's a lot more.
Boys.
We are very much tired and laboured right now. I thought her storyline was a bit going down that route of like how her mental health is being affected by being a mother and all. I found that a bit of a stretch and a bit.
What?
Tired, to use that word again. T word, tired again. But it's fun. I mean, the tonally, it's like really dark black comedy about serial killing and how they've somehow managed to incorporate a serial killer into their lives with the help of podcasting. If you like, but obviously it's got a lot in common with Only Murders in the Building in terms of commenting on people's obsession with true crime and turning that into podcasts, particularly, etc. And they literally have discussions. I remember in season one, they have discussions between the couple about, you know, we can make a lot of money, because they're both, well, the premise of series one was they need money. They're desperate for money for various reasons. And so they turn to become true life podcasters out of desperation and turning it into a success. So there's stuff that's dealt with Only Murders. If Only Murders is silly, to use your favourite word, and it is unashamedly silly and will do anything for a laugh and is out-and-out comedy, really, this is trying to be a bit like edgy and social commentary, you know, and talk about in the morality of true crime itself and the genre, hence the title, based on true story. And but it's also a little bit, I found it a little bit self-consciously contrived and trying to be a little bit outrageous, you know. So there's loads of talk about breast pumping, and she's going to breast pump in every scene in the beginning. Like, she tells one guy, I'm going to come into you, or we're going to talk about stuff, and I'm going to fucking breast pump myself to insanity or something like that. Some of the dialogue is a bit forced. Bottom line for me is, I don't buy a word of this show. I think it's perfectly entertaining. They're really good. Kelly Cuoco's great in everything. The cast is good. Tom Bateman's good. It's complete bullshit.
This is not based on a true way of living, right? This is not hyper realistic. I didn't see the first series, but what I would say is props to this show for doing a good comprehensive recap.
Oh, the recap was great.
I thought it was really good.
What a relief.
It really was. I was like, oh, okay, cool. I'm instantly in the story. I know what's going on. It's offbeat, it's fun, it's ridiculous and entertaining, as Boyd says. It took me a little time to warm to it, because it's an insane fucking concept that you would encounter a serial killer and rather than shopping them, think, no, let's make a podcast with them. It's like banana crackers. But I think the dynamic between them is fun. And I thought it made interesting observations on motherhood through the lens of comedy. So it's like, yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, it does, yeah.
And I think that's important. So it was less irritating to me than seemingly to you. But yeah, I mean, ridiculous and entertaining. Not going to watch anymore.
Now that is a poster quote.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it. I can't comment, but it sounds fabulous.
I haven't seen the first series. So to be, you know, like, it's an investment of my time, and I'd rather be investing elsewhere.
Fair enough. Okay, based on a true story, Boydie, where can we find that and when?
Season 2 begins today, Monday the 16th of December on SkyMax/now.
2024?
I can confirm it's 2024.
What else is this week? So What If, the third season of Disney's Marvel animated, well, it's animation, you wouldn't care, of What If comes to Disney Plus on Sunday. We didn't get screeners of that in time. Is there anything else out this week? I'm going to say not a lot.
I mean, if there is, and we haven't reviewed it, I mean, that would be very remiss.
It'd be pretty bad, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, it would be.
It's not a banner week for TV.
It's not.
Well, people are running scared from Christmas.
Well, but do you know what? Every year, there is partly that. Yeah, I mean, they do people save up, people, I mean, channels and streaming services save up their stuff for the Christmas fortnight.
Yeah,
so,
also, as consumers, we need to rest our eyeballs ready for the marathon.
Well, that's true.
Yeah, well, there's loads of fat non-scripted stuff. There's, you know, I mean, if you want, you know, there's Sports Personality of the Year, there's...
Ooh, who do you think will get it, Boydo?
I think it could well be the darts guy, Luke Little.
Oh, Luke.
Yeah. Which would be...
Ooh, did we say... I don't think we said this. When we went to the Sky Christmas drinks... where it was our pod night out. We had a very good time. And there was a darts board and you can enter a competition, right?
Oh, we didn't mention this. We didn't give them the post-mortem to the party.
And also Sky, because they, you know, the sports and the darts and Luke. And so, yeah, they ran this competition of like whoever got the highest one, first three places will get something. Now, I'm uber competitive and I love just throwing myself into a game. Took my first shot and did three shots rather. And it was rubbish. I got really bad.
It wasn't good.
Result. No. And they were originally going to only let us have one go. And then as the night went on and the drinks flowed, they said, all right, people can get another go. And this time I took it less seriously. And I feel like this is a life metaphor. And guys, I came second.
You did.
And I won a voucher for 250 British pounds, English pounds, to go to the Corinthia Hotel. Whenever I wanted.
Wouldn't even get you a room, but yes.
Spa. They use the spa.
Yeah. It's for a massage,
isn't it? Well, actually, I've opted for taking my best friend who's sleep deprived, got
James.
Twins.
James, you and James going
Jimbo.
To... Jimbo.
Me and Jimbo are going for an afternoon tea.
Wow.
Yeah.
I look forward to it.
That's good. I'm jealous.
The cake, finally.
Yeah, your best friend. Your best real friend.
Look at the jealousy in boys.
Yeah.
I sensed it. Yeah, so anyway, sorry, that was a connection to darts.
Yes, that's
true. And our night out, our pod night out.
We cannot talk about how Boydie and I did at the darts. That can never be shared.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Let's just say that corkboard behind got a beating.
Yeah, we weren't even on the leaderboard. So it was
a shocker. Or in fact, the actual dance board.
Yeah, it was a shocker. Mm. Awful stuff. But yeah, that was a fun night. And we had our pictures taken in a photo booth, and we're gonna put them together a little Christmas card thing, aren't we?
Yes.
Out on the socials.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah,
that's gonna be fun. Right, so we are done with this particular podcast. That is our penultimate proper podcast of the year. We are nearly done. Isn't that exciting?
It is. Does anyone else want a long lie down?
Yeah.
Very much so. Yeah. Very much. You can tell we're running out of steam. Like, well, yeah, we've reviewed 1.5 shows this week.
Yeah, we haven't even done the format point of what's our show of the week.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
The one is our show of the week.
Yeah, what is our show of the week? It's James, the one show we reviewed.
Pull your shit together. Come on.
It's strike, to be fair.
Okay,
so out of the 1.75 shows. Yeah.
Strike for me too.
What was your excuse for not washing?
I didn't get it in time.
That's right.
Like, you, because you only sorted the link out an hour before we recorded.
So
yeah. It was an opt-out.
If you don't think that's gone in the memory bank.
Oh, That's coming back to haunt me, isn't it? Okay, that is it then for this week's podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please do head on to a platform, not just Apple. We're not completely in the pocket of Big Tim Cook, but do leave us a 5-star rating. And if you want to follow us on the social medias, if you want Harry, our new social media editor, to see all of your comments, please do follow us on Blue Sky, at Pilot TV Pod, on Twitter, on Instagram, on all these various things. And we are also at Caribera, at Boyd Hilton, and at James C. Dyer. Now, next week is our final normal episode of this year. And the plan for next week's podcast was to do the Christmas shows, the shows that are on over Christmas. Now, we will not be doing Squid Game Season 2 because it is literally embargoed until Boxing Day, regardless of what the Golden Globes say. But now, and this is the caveat, we're going to be doing the Christmas shows or some of the Christmas shows, but Boydie has to sort out all the screeners.
Yeah.
This was the deal. Yeah.
I regret this now. Let me set the scene. Can I do a reverse ferret?
No.
Boyd, I gave it the big chat. He was like, come on, we've got to do an episode. And so James and I rightfully said, okay. And James said, you've got to get the screeners in. And he was like, all right, I will. And then he headed off to New York and forgot about it. And
now
he's having to reap the consequences of his bold claim that he
I don't think I've ever seen this face as smug as the one on James.
I know. I mean, it's in his top three, for sure.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So anyway, Boyd is going to, and for our Australian-American listeners who find this expression weird, Boyd is going to have to pull his finger out.
get us
those screeners.
Well, I look forward to seeing what happens. So we may or may not be reviewing some shows for you next week. It's hard to say.
And we also have to find time to record the thing because Kay's having like a 5-day celebration of her birthday.
Also accurate.
Yeah.
Also accurate.
Christmas birthdays.
Yeah, that is true. That is true. You've had yours. Kay and mine are coming.
Yeah.
Just
around the corner.
Yeah.
Oh, do you know what I'm doing on my birthday?
What are you doing? Oh, God, watching the show that can't be named.
No, you're not going to believe it. When I tell you, you're not going to believe it.
Getting a tattoo.
Elon Musk.
Taskmaster Live.
Oh, I believe it. Yeah, I fully believe it. I remember when he didn't know what Taskmaster was.
I still don't know what Taskmaster is.
God. Wait, I was going to say, you don't watch
it. I don't watch it. I've never seen it. I don't even know what it is. But Chris has got tickets to Taskmaster Live and we're going.
All right, sod that. If you're going to Taskmaster Live having not watched it, then next year we're doing Crystal Maze Experience, all three of us, or an escape room. What would you prefer?
I mean, in many ways, this podcast is an escape room.
I know it is. Should we do it, Boydo? Would you be up for an escape room?
No.
Would you be up for the Crystal Maze experience?
Absolutely not.
Boys have none of it.
No.
Absolutely no fun for the pod team.
You do it. You do.
Have fun.
That's really okay. Team building. I'll just do it on my own.
We'll pop down after the Corinthia tea.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. All right. See you there, James.
Be fun. Mm. Okay, that is it. We're done. We will see you maybe for some Christmas shows on next week's show. And if you are on Pilot Plus, I was going to say Pilot Plus this week. Yeah. What shows are we going to cover on Pilot Plus? There are no shows. There's a very real possibility we might have Dexter screeners by Pilot Plus.
Oh, I forgot about Pilot
Plus. Who the hell knows? But there'll be something on there. So please do subscribe.
It's worth it.
It is worth it. Absolutely. Okay, that's it. We're done. I think we're finished. Until Thursday then, Pilot out.